Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, welcome to the Mick Clifford Podcast with the Irish Examiner. Now, last weekend, the Bishop of Kerry, Roy Brown, wrote a pastoral letter that was read out at churches in the diocese. In it, he said the area is facing into further retirements from a number of priests, which will leave the diocese with major challenges. Retirement age for priests is 75. And already there are 15 parishes in the Kerry diocese without priests. And the diocese itself covers County Kerry quite obviously, but also parts of North Cork. This, I suppose, is the latest manifestation of a huge fall-off in the numbers of priests available to serve their communities. Now, in the last census, a total of 77% of Irish people identified themselves as Catholics. And, you know, as we know, we've had a large influx of people into the country over the last 20 years. But of those who weren't born here, huge numbers of them also described themselves as Catholics. For instance, about 70% of the Polish community did. So there is still a huge base for Catholicism. I think there's no doubt about that. I mean, we're all under the impression there's been a huge fall off. But if you look at it from those numbers, there's a fall off in the practices of Catholics by all means, no question about that. But just purely in those numbers, it still is a major chunk of the population. But there is definitely an issue over the number of priests that are required to serve that congregation in the manner to which over decades people have become accustomed. Some of you may have seen the documentary on RT television recently with Ardlo Hanlon, I think it was called The Last Priest in Ireland, and that touched on some of this, and I think it was very interesting. I'm of a similar age to Ardlo Hanlon myself, and he said, if I'm correct, he said the year he was born, something like 1,400 young men were studying to be priests, and now I'd say we're down into double figures perhaps this year, thereabouts. We'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, we know there's been obvious decline in religious observance. We know the whole issue around the abuse, how it affected the Catholic Church and people's attitudes towards it. But still, as I say, it's still a major part of the lives of so many people. So where is all this going and what can be done? Joining me to discuss it is Father Roy Donovan from the Association of Catholic Priests. Roy, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Mick.
Roy, first of all, if you could deal with Kerry just because it was in the news. That pastoral letter from Bishop Brown, was it unusual or is Kerry a particular case because it's a large rural county?
I think a number of dioceses have been doing what Kerry are doing. Maybe Kerry are a little bit more advanced than many others in terms of that they have so many priestless parishes. And as they said in the pastoral, they've been going at this now for the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And they've been dealing with the challenges. So it's not new. But of course, the letter does present a lot of challenges, how to go forward, as you have already said in your introduction, with priests getting less, getting very busy, getting much older, and yet there is a fairly good enough population of Catholics there still. So there's a very big challenge in how to manage this change. And I suppose that's his primary concern, Ray Brown, is how to manage into the future and to manage with the resources that he's got.
Yeah, and I suppose there are a number of aspects to that. And one he touched on, I think, was perhaps a different or a greater role for the laity, and he mentioned pastoral leaders. I think he said there was 26 in the Kerry diocese. What exactly are pastoral leaders, Roy?
Pastoral leaders, they have been doing that in Limerick diocese. They put on a 2-year course of training and formation, and they invite all the parishes to put forward somebody from the parish who might be interested in taking more responsibility and taking leadership, and they're given the resources and the support required to make them into a leader. And that's, again, Kerry are probably ahead of a lot of other dioceses in doing that kind of training. And the hope would be that they would take over some form of leadership then in the parishes. We're doing a bit of it as well here in our own diocese. And it's very challenging because they don't know what to do. And a lot of the priests don't know what to do with them either, you know. So it's also new how to, there are no structures there to bring about this new form of, as he talks about in the pastoral, about this co-responsibility, co-leadership. It's all very new to everyone.
But in general terms, would it be fair to say that the general idea of it is that they would be there to share the burden of what's required of priests traditionally, but doing those duties that perhaps it would be decided didn't have to be done by priests?
Yeah, and I think especially for priestless parishes, maybe they might become leaders of pastoral councils. Maybe they might take over doing funerals, baptism teams. They might do maybe the communion programs and the confirmation programs, because these are a huge, heavy burden on a lot of priests, you know, preparing the young people and preparing the parents and providing programs of, I suppose, more involvement and participation in the sacraments. So a parish would be very lucky to get hold of one of them if they were willing to take over doing the communion and the confirmation program.
And in your experience, is that kind of system, I'm thinking in particular, perhaps maybe going back a while, in places like the developing world, is it something that would have been used there? I mean, what I suppose I'm getting at is, would we have come from a very conservative structure in that respect, whereby traditionally there wouldn't have been that kind of role for the laity, but perhaps in other countries there would have been?
Yes, you're correct there. Because we've had adequate numbers of priests, and every parish maybe had two or more priests, and the priests took over all these kind of tasks and ministries, and it kept people very passive, and people didn't have to do anything, only turn up. And now we're asking people to get involved, and there's no tradition much or culture of how people are to take up leadership in parishes, or how they are to become more involved. Most people wouldn't know how to do that or how to go about it, because it's not there. And also, there's a very important report that has come out there recently. As you know, where the Pope Francis has brought the church into a new phase, what's called the Synodal Pathway, which is basically that we're all meant to walk together on the one road, talk to one another and listen to the Holy Spirit and discover how we're going to be the new way of being church. So that's here for the future. And we had the Universal International Synod there in Rome. Ireland is preparing for one for next year, 2025. So we're caught between two pathways at the moment. But the steering committee set up by the bishops, they have employed professional people to do a survey and to do focus groups and to get an honest assessment of what's going on the ground among lay people and among priests. And this report is 84 pages. It's a very honest report from people on the ground as to where they're at and what's needed to go forward. And some of the things that's been said there is that a lot of priests were lukewarm towards the synodal pathway. And Ray Brown says in his pastoral that we're going to move forward in a synodal way with people. So priests haven't been trained in the synodal pathway of team collaboration with one another and with people. And so these 26 pastoral workers, it's a very big challenge for us priests to change our ways so that they can be co-leaders and collaborative we work in that kind of way. So this report or this of 84 pages is going to be very helpful. And it's also telling us that the experiences to date of the people who did take part in the Sustainable Pathway last year has been very positive. It also puts out the challenge that a lot of lay people are not involved in this, and as well as a lukewarm response from priests. The lukewarm response from priests is twofold. One is they're very busy, and two, they don't understand enough what the Sindel way of being church is, because it calls for a very radical change of priesthood.
Yeah, and it's just a couple of things, though, that's it's very interesting, actually, the whole thing of saying the lukewarm reception from priests. Would it be the case that, similar to all other walks of life in some ways, anytime there's a change of circumstances, if you look in the secular world, in the workplace, for instance, that one group might perceive that the change means they're losing some of their power or status, there's a certain resistance to that. And that's right across all sections of society, I'd suggest. And just the other thing you mentioned there, Roy, in terms of the passivity of the congregations, did that lead to a scenario whereby it was easy to be a Catholic in this country? You didn't have to invest that much of yourself.
Yes, and people would give a name for that. They would call that cultural Catholicism, that you went along with, I suppose, everybody did the same thing. You just turned up for the sacraments. And see, that's another problem with the church, is that the church is so centered around sacraments. And to have sacraments, then you have to have priests. And the sacraments are very dependent on priests. And if we're inviting people to take part in a new way and becoming leaders, that's a very big challenge to move away from over-reliance on sacraments and over-reliance on priests. And that's another very big challenge for us to face into. And I see, and this is the thing about Ray Brown's pastoral. It's, you know, on paper, it's wonderful. But the actual reality of engaging people and priests working together, this is going to be a very slow process. It's going to take a lot of change of mindsets. And as you said, there's you know, you have resistance to change. And I suppose the Irish Church would be seen traditionally as very conservative and very much against change. There'd be a lot of people against change. However, now the research of this 84 pages says that many of the people who did engage, they want change, and they see that change has to be the way forward. But there is resistance, and how to manage resistance as well. That's all part of the Sindel pathway, how to deal with conflicts and strong personalities and how to be able to listen to them and how we can all go forward together. That all takes a lot of skills, good listening skills, good facilitation skills, and then how to listen to the Holy Spirit and all of that, the whole spiritual area as well. You know, so there's a lot of challenges to Ray Brown's pastoral to get it to work.
There is, and you mentioned, and I can well see what you mean in terms of this kind of thing will take time, particularly when people all their lives, and the vast majority of people who are adherents to Catholicism would have been so for all their lives, when they've been schooled in a particular way. And similarly, as you say, when priests have been trained and got used to a particular way. But the other side of that, though, is there isn't much time to get it right because there is such a shortage of priests.
Yeah, there's an urgency. And I suppose the only thing I can say is that this research paper that was produced of 84 pages, which is available on the Irish Sindel website, that's huge learnings for us as we go forward. Especially we have the Irish National Synod in 2025. We're going to have a National Assembly, and we're going to have a lot of people involved, as well as priests from every diocese in the country. So there's an urgency, and this National Assembly and the Irish Synod is massively welcome. I never thought I would see that day.
Why did you say that, Roy?
Well, let's put it this way. In the ACP, Association of Catholic Priests, we've been looking for a national synod for the last 10 years. And for a national assembly, we have always been putting forward that that was the way to go. And but there's been a huge, blockage among the bishops to that. And so that's why I say it's miraculous that this is happening. And this is, to me, a great hope that it will bring urgency and it will bring the new, what Ray Brown wants in his pastoral, the new way of priests and people working together and making decisions collaboratively.
And that assembly you're talking about, would that be, in short term, I suppose, a gathering together of all the priests in the country?
I think maybe not all the priests. That's not possible. I think the numbers are getting very small. But it will be a number of priests from every, probably a priest maybe, and people from every parish. I actually don't know how that, we haven't heard anything about that yet, because the International Synod is completing its way in October, and there is the whole synthesis that has come out from that, and the Irish bishops are more concerned about responding to that and being ready for October. So in some ways it's got in the way of the national Senate and Assembly, you know, we're not able to face into it yet, put it that way.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Right, now the other issue that arises, and it's the perennial one, and that is the spectre of whether priests should be allowed to marry. In fact, this week in the Irish Examiner, there was a letter from a reader who gave his experience. I think he was a teacher in the UK for a long time before returning here, and he spoke of his experience and noticing people of various religion, that they were allowed to marry. And I think he also mentioned, I think, some Anglican priests who converted to Catholicism who'd already been married. And, you know, it all seemed a relatively sensible idea. And I suppose he was really writing in the context of what you might call the ban on marriage, whatever, being another possible blockage in attracting people to the priesthood. What, in terms of the Association of Catholic Priests, would your position be on married priests?
Well, I mean, our position would be that, first of all, it should be the open to women priests as well, you know. It's just, I mean, I heard Professor Thomas O'Loughlin there. He was speaking at a liturgical day in Limerick recently. And he put forward that the success of all these meetings and synods in the future will be whether all the people gather around the table as equals. And his vision was that when we gather around the table as equals, we'll discover that the Spirit is alive and that the various ministries that we need will come from around the table. That's the way he saw the future. So that means it doesn't matter about married priests or women priests, because it'll be whoever's around the table and whoever has the ministries, be they married, be they lay, be they women or men, you know. So because the change is going to be so massive, we're looking at something like that, I think.
And as I understand it, there was an attempt among the bishops at one stage, I think it might have been Bishop was Leo O'Reilly, who attempted to discuss whether women priests or married priests, I'm not sure which, was something that should be explored or whatever, but that was completely knocked back. I mean, do you sense any appetite among the bishops for either priests being allowed to marry or for ordaining women priests?
For the last well over 40 years, I've heard this debate about married priests, and you get tired of it because it's never going to happen. That's the feeling I think among a lot of priests would be. And for most of us, because we've gone so old now, that it's not really an issue. It might be for the younger guys, but that's why I'm saying that the future is going to be very different, and priesthood is going to have to be reinvented completely, in my view. And
but would that form part of the reinvention? Like, for example, I think some people would find it difficult to understand that, no, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand, Anglicans who convert to Catholicism and who are already married, that's not an issue. Yet if you come directly into the church, you can't get married.
Correct. And, you know, there's also some Ukrainian priests over here who are married. And I think there's a Ukrainian priest running a parish in the either Klein or Cork diocese. And I've heard some people say recently, it's very unfair that he can operate and run a parish or co-responsible parish. He's sharing co-responsibility maybe with another priest, and that other priests don't have that choice. So people on the ground see that very clearly, that, you know, these are changes that should be happening.
But you don't sense there's any immediate prospect of it?
I don't really, and I don't. Now, I mean, I have to be full of hope too, because in the Senate in October, from what I gather, everything is still on the table, including women priests, married priests, all the hot button issues, that they're all still on the table, and so the spirit works, and I'd be more hopeful now than any time over the last 45 years or so.
And specifically in relation to women priests, I mean, look, there's no getting away from the fact that the church's institution was highly patriarchal. Apart from the issue of whether or not women priests may be ordained in the future, do you in general terms see it as less patriarchal today than going back 20, 30, 40 years? Or is that something that has persisted?
I belong, and I feel I belong to a patriarchal system, a hierarchical system. And Pope Francis has put out a few times that he wants to turn the pyramid upside down. So we're still very strong patriarchal system. The language in our liturgy is male. I've heard some people say now about the pastoral, some of these pastoral letters as well, they're very clerical language. You know, they're not language that ordinary people use, and to get back to the point, a lot of our language in the liturgy is male orientated, and the God that we speak about is male exclusively, and it must be very difficult for a woman to be in our church when the language and the images and the models, as it were, of leadership are all male. And, you know, we do know that Jesus opened up equality. And Paul got Jesus, he said, in Christ there's neither male nor female, Jew or Greek, slave or free, all are free. And Jesus started off that movement, but that movement got eclipsed very quickly, and you know, women were told to go back into their homes again to get out of the public space. So if we are to be faithful to the good news of Jesus Christ, we have to bring equality into the very structures, into every part of what it is to be Catholic. That has to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. It just occurred to me there, as you said, Jesus Christ, as we know, and irrespective of whether one adheres to the religion or believes in Catholicism or any form of Christianity, I think there's absolutely, historically, no doubt that he absolutely existed. And as you say, he would have been very much one who was not discriminating against genders or whatever. And as you said, soon after that, as the institution was formed, it became that way. It's a bit similar in some ways to the revolution that started this state, to be honest with you, because again, women had their role and they were quickly told to get back into their box once the state settled down, kind of thing. It's the way some of these things, go sometimes.
And it's remarkable, isn't it, that we have three public holidays here in Ireland to men, Jesus, Stephen and Patrick. And for the first time ever, we now have a public holiday to a woman, to Bridget.
That's a very good point,
So there is hope. And I have to acclaim the people, whoever inspired the government to bring in this holiday and to give Bridget this kind of acclaim. And that, you know, that it's another step of giving acknowledgement and equality to the feminine.
Absolutely. Another thing, just in terms of the logistics, right? It's been a certain phenomenon, and you might tell me how widespread or otherwise it is, that some dioceses have made links with dioceses in other countries, I think in particularly India and maybe some African countries. And out of those links, we have priests coming in here from those countries to basically take up the shortfall. I mean, is that going on in a lot of places, or is it something that can assist to any great extent in...
Well, it is. And all we're doing is maintenance of a very old system that's gone and that's dead. And I don't see them as contributing to a very new system, because they're coming from cultures that are very patriarchal and that are very traditional. And also, Irish people are very well educated. And are they able to break down the gospel and link it in a very credible way to modern Irish people? I just wonder about that, you know, but I think all we're doing is maintenance, keeping up a system that's over and finished with, because it's another way of not handing over power to lay people and allowing lay people to exercise, as Ray Brown says in his pastoral, co-responsible leadership.
Yeah, a finger in the dike, I suppose, kind of thing in that respect. The Association of Catholic Priests, the organisation yourselves, right? I mean, I think it would be fair to say you'd consider yourselves, and you'd be regarded by people who might observe it, as being progressive within the strictures of the church. Just briefly, how did the association come about?
The association came about through organising a meeting for priests. I think it's about 11 years ago now. There was no representative organization for priests at the time. There had been one maybe 8 or 10 years prior to that. And then the bishops tried to set up a representative organization for priests, but none of the clergy seemed to have taken that up. And so I suppose there was a lot of frustration among priests, and people like Father Brendan Hoban, Tony Flannery, and a few more got together to talk about this. And then they said they'd hold a meeting. I think it was in Portlaoise. I actually remember going to the meeting, and the meeting had to be changed because so many priests came that they had to get a bigger hall to accommodate everyone. And there was great energy, great life in it. And that was the seed bed of the association. I suppose Tony Flannery and Brendan Hoban and I'm trying to think of some of the others now. They were all very, enlightened guys, and they felt that something had to be done, that we were going nowhere in the Irish Church at that time.
And how was and how is it received by the hierarchy?
We've had a lot of difficulty over the years. It was very difficult to get meetings with the bishops, and then the meeting with the bishops were also very controlling, and we never felt we were making any progress. We never felt that it was possible for us to work together in any kind of way that would be fruitful. And so I think a lot of our experiences were very difficult. They have been very difficult experiences. We've been accused too, of course, of being bishop bashing and being very negative to bishops and all that. And that has been thrown at us. But we have done our best to try and be open. And I suppose you'd have to say that the meeting in Athlone for the preparation for the International Synod there was the last year, the year before. And that meeting, we were invited to. All the bishops were there, and people from representatives from all the dioceses were there. So we'd all have to say that was a very positive. That was a very good. That was a whole sense of we want to work together, and we can work together. You know, there was a very positive vibes about that meeting.
Of course, an organization like yours would be anathema to any kind of hierarchical structure, and to that extent, I suppose it's inevitable there would be a certain amount of conflict. But are there equivalent organizations for priests in other countries that you know of?
Yes, there are. In America, they have an association as well. I think also it was the Austrians who they were the part of the inspiration. I can't think of the name of the priest there. There was a very high up priest there in that diocese, and he created an association of priests there, and they were very effective. And I say that's what maybe struck us and what struck the priests in Australia. There's also an association in Australia, and also I think there was certainly one in England as well. So after that, I'm not so sure. And we have had meetings with the Americans, and we also have a lot of contact with the Australians as well. The wonderful thing I find about all these meetings is that, and you don't find the same thing in the diocese, is there's great openness. You can say what you like, and there's a great freedom, and there's a freedom in naming things and also putting out how you're doing and what's going on for you. Those meetings, they have been very supportive. And I just wonder, again, looking at this research program that has come out, and they're looking at this, that a lot of priests need a lot of support. A lot of priests need spaces where they can talk more openly and say how things are. And a number of priests said that from the focus groups that they were in, a space was created where they could be very open and be very honest and truthful. And so I think that's going to be one of the results of that program, is that they're going to provide support and training. I mean, some of the priests were saying they'd love to be part of supervision groups, you know, where you could review how you're working with people and how you could change and how you could adapt to a new way. So some of the priests were saying that it'd be great to have those kind of support structures in place as we move forward into the future.
And would it be fair to say, Roy, that like the priests who'd be in the association would, to a greater extent, be in touch with sentiment on the ground in terms of the congregations and developments in that respect, rather than the hierarchy themselves, and that your input would come from that perspective?
Yeah, and we would have had a lot of meetings with priests in dioceses down through the years as well. And we would heard what a lot of priests would be saying on the ground. And also we have an AGM, an open AGM every year, where we invite in outside speakers, and where we have time then to reflect on ourselves, on what's going on for us and what are the issues. So all that has, it's been a great support to one another. And I suppose if you're trying to adapt to all the changes, the rapid changes that are going on in our country, the rapid changes going on in our church, I do anyway. We need the support of one another.
Oh, definitely. I can well see it, and it's I can see there'd be huge positivity from that point of view. Any kind of a support, I could also see, and I think you'd agree, there's no way in the world this would have happened 30 or 40 years ago. It just wouldn't have been tolerated. But thankfully, we're in a different place now. And on that theme, I suppose, Roy, just to finish, are you hopeful for the way forward for the church in the image you'd like to see it?
Well, as I said earlier on, that the idea that there's an international synod where everything is open for another year anyway, and it's going to be on the table in October. And also we have an opportunity at the moment. They want feedback. I think they're looking for feedback from every parish in Ireland to the report that came out in October. So we have an opportunity to influence things. And we do need to take those opportunities up. So I'm very hopeful that way. And then we have our own National Synod then in 25. All that should feed into the National Synod. And I am very hopeful. I never thought I would see this kind of, environment, open environment taking place where there is more listening and where people's voices, all voices are going to be listened to and heard. That's the way forward into the future. And that will be the future church where that the Holy Spirit is at work in everybody, and that what the Holy Spirit is doing, that we touch that by connecting with one another. So if we do that, I think there's great hope for the future.
Yeah, interesting times ahead, no question about it for the church. Roy Donovan, thank you very much for talking to us today.
You're welcome, Nick.
I'd also like to thank, as always, our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. We'll be back with you again next week. Talk to you then.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.